Hey guys, this is Jamie here with you as always for another weekly edition of Movie Moment at ThinkMeFlyThink.com. Here with me as always is our British gentleman agent in his own mind, Mr. Phil G. Salo, sir.
I do the intros, goddammit! You.
You have been doing them for a while, actually. It is kind of weird to imagine that. Yeah, we shake it up a little by going back to how we started, and I'm sure in a few weeks, you know, our other, you know, gentlemen joining us, we'll introduce them as well. Mr. Ed Hawken, is it Captain Ed Hawken, I believe? Say hello, sir.
Yes, I'm still working over at Police Squad right now.
Which you haven't checked, if you haven't seen that, you should check out that television series on DVD, little plug right there, as well as the Naked Gun film series.
Just maybe, if you only really need to see the first one, which is the best.
I don't think there's really much debate about that one. But, I mean, I do like the sequels and shit. They're funny. But, I mean, you know, they're okay. Great titles, you know. 22,
oh, yeah.
33 and a third and 2.5, I believe is what the titles were.
Right.
I'd hate to see what they were going to call a fourth one, because I think at one point they were going to do, like, a direct-to-video. Phil actually did an article on this a while back. They were going to do a direct-to-video fourth film. Is that correct, sir?
It was. We talked about it on the show. Good memory there. I do believe we did talk about it, but I said that there is no way that it could possibly happen, for one reason being that Priscilla Presley just is in no condition to be on the screen anymore.
Yeah. That's...
After she got injected with ball-bearing grease.
They would also have to wheel out Leslie Nielsen from whatever cryogenic tank he's, you know, hibernating in right now.
That tank
must
be
on the bridge. It's funny because we don't know them.
Exactly.
But kind of a yet another week of Dead Zone news. So we got a couple items, and then we'll get to our main.
We need a theme. We need a theme for September, for the month.
I think we have. I think we did. Ed came up with the Dead Zone.
Yeah, and the theme would be just a desolate desert wind. If this was a visual medium, you'd see a tumbleweed rolling by.
You really would. You'd hear it right now. But the
theater attendance for Jennifer's body.
Once again, you'd see you'd hear a desert wind with a tumbleweed rolling by.
Phil trying to keep himself relevant. We want to be the first podcast to get out this week where we, you know, shit on Jennifer's body for its terrible box office.
Welcome to Movie Gloat.
Yeah, that's gonna be the title. This week, Movie Gloat.
Don't like that lady, do you?
I think she's okay.
Might as well talk about it, just for a second.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, Jennifer's Body bombed this weekend. It opened at number 5. I think it made about $6 or $7 million. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'll look up real quick. I just don't have any respect for the biting the hand that feeds you mentality. That's what I don't like, Phil. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, when you go around the press shitting on, you know, the people who made you left and right, coincidentally, after, you know, the big movie you starred in or co-starred in just opened, I find that odd timing. Maybe that's just me on that one. I just don't respect that. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't like Michael Bay as much as the next person. I mean, you know, he's a bastard. I think that's pretty much like no shit Sherlock territory. But really, you're going to say this like after Transformers 2 opened, you spent all this time promoting it with the guy. Like, didn't you, you know, you saw all the premieres and they were always there. I think Shy was at a couple of them, but not as many. He was too busy having a career. And, you know, come on. Like, I don't know. That's just the way I feel. I do feel good the fact that maybe I'm wrong on this one, but it seems that, like, Diablo, she is, like, Fox's mouthing off has stolen all the thunder away from Diablo Cody getting any kind of heat for this movie. Like, she's going to take a hit for this, obviously, but previously, where she was going to take a major hit, I get the impression it won't be as bad now that Fox has been the one putting herself out there for this movie, less than Diablo Cody. Maybe that's just me on that one.
I just think that, I mean, you know how I feel about her performances in Transformers in the first one, and, you know, I might get flack for this, but I don't care. I didn't think she was that bad. She didn't have a role to play, really.
She just had
to be herself, so it's not about that. But in the second one, and you would know this, of course, luckily, she doesn't try. She doesn't try. And to be honest, I don't blame her. The way she's shot in that movie, the way she's used by Bay, it's really, really offensive, actually, even to me. Not just offensive to women, offensive to me. As a guy.
Well, I mean, again, I think it's... Didn't we call it camera fucking? Because that's all he did in the second one, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like I said, there's a scene in the movie which exists for no purpose other than for her to change clothes outdoors, on the grass, on the front lawn. It's stuff like that. But, you know, I thought, well, maybe she can act if she tries, if she really gets behind something, if they find something that's right for her. Reading the synopsis of this movie, I thought it was a perfect fit for her. You know, a bitch plays a bitch, so it seems.
Wow, but I wasn't the one with name calling. You're the one that said that one, sir. You go ahead.
No, I know. Well, no, but like I say, can't judge a movie I haven't seen. Apparently the movie is about a bitch that kills people, yeah. And she's a bitch apparently in real life, and apparently, according to the reviews, she cannot act.
There have been some people who backed her up and said she's decent in the flick. I think Roger Ebert said, like, she's actually pretty decent in the flick, and go ahead, Ed.
The problem with the movie is the movie itself and not her so much. It's just not a very good movie. You know, I have heard this from a consensus of people on this issue, and I don't know. I mean,
it screams second screenplay or sophomore slump. You know, that was the problem with this movie. I got the impression that they only made it because Diablo Cody was going through quite a hot streak coming off of obviously Juno. She won the Oscar for it. I just get the impression they wouldn't have made it any other time. It's like, why would you make this kind of movie? No offense, but, you know, I'm hoping... And she's got the TV show, The United States of Tara, which I've seen a couple episodes and I thought was actually really good.
I agree.
So, I think it was the great Andre De La Morte over at Chud said, like, you know, it's all about her third movie. If she's got the TV show that's doing great, so if she does a third movie that doesn't do well, then she basically becomes a TV writer. That might be the case, actually. And Andre knows his shit. You know, Ed and I follow him on Chud, so, you know, we'll see what happens.
Why the hell was this movie, which, if I'm reading it right, is a killer movie, it's about someone who kills people, why was it released this month as opposed to next month? Is next month too crowded?
I think we know the reason, my friend.
Well, apart from the obvious reason.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a given right there. It's a shitty movie. The studio didn't have faith in it. They just dumped it. I mean, is there any good-looking movie coming out this month that could actually... that could be good. I guess The Circus...
That would make money?
Yeah, that too.
Maybe The Informant. That's it.
Have you seen?
Maybe.
You have not seen yet.
I haven't.
Go ahead. I guess he hasn't seen it yet.
No. When's that movie 9 coming out?
9's already come out, actually.
Oh, well, good marketing there. I didn't even know.
It had like a 5-day opening weekend. I think it did around like 15 or so. But, you know.
Is that any good, do we know?
I don't know.
I heard it was.
Well, see, this past weekend it dropped like... it didn't drop that badly this weekend. It only dropped about 50%. But it did about $6 million, so I don't know if that's considered good or not. It's currently at around $23 million. I don't know how much they made it for. So, but that's not a movie. I didn't want to go see that movie. It just looks so. Some movies look weird, and you're intrigued by that, but it just looks weird for the sake of being weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you guys thought about that. Now,
no, I agree to a certain extent. I mean, for one thing, it had Crispin Glover in it. I mean, that's amazing. You could pull that off, but. Yeah, I had heard. I mean, I heard it was visually, you know, interesting, but the story blows, and you know and they called it Stitch Punk, so
that's what the,
it was
really?
Just not a ver- hmm?
Stitch Punk. Never heard of that. So
I think that was Alex Riviello that had coined that term for this movie. So it was just not good. It was uninteresting.
It's ironic that we talk about like this being the dead zone in terms of like film release, and yet like TV is this on purpose, like. You know, we get shitty movies that don't make either underperform or bomb in September, and yet, like, all these TV shows premiere this month for the most part. Is it Hollywood's little way of, like, focusing attention towards television? Is that on purpose, or...
Jamie, I would look out your window. There is a sniper trained on your head. At this moment, you have discovered evil conspiracy of the universe.
Hey, what's that glowing dot on your forehead?
Hey, it's Arnold outside of my house. Sarah Connor. No, I'm not Sarah Connor. He still breaks down my door anyway.
Just walks off after doing that.
Yeah, sorry. Actually, the Terminator wouldn't apologize. He would just leave.
Of course.
Yeah.
Damn Terminators, we're not programmed with manners. So anyway, yeah, a couple of shows premiering this week I'll catch. I caught The Office last week. I enjoyed it. I've seen better season premieres, though, for The Office. I wasn't as nuts about it as everyone else was, but... Guess you guys didn't watch that. Okay, yes, not. Anyway, going into film news.
Films. Yeah. Woo.
We are calling movie moan for, you know, not movie gloat, movie moan. There was the news from last Monday that DC was, or Warner Brothers was getting their shit together, forming DC Entertainment, presumably to help get some of these film properties, you know, up and going. Pretty much everyone presumed that Superman would be one of the big ones they would get their act together going, the new Superman film, whatever it's going to be, I'm sorry?
You'd think,
apparently. Well, I mean, we heard rumblings that, like, they had already lined up a couple of people to, like, Grant Morrison, a comic writer, was sort of, they had done a similar thing with Jeff Johns, comic writer, who wrote, like, sort of a story treatment or an outline, and they handed it over to a screenwriter by the name of, I think it was Dan Mazzulla, if I'm mispronouncing your name, I'm sorry, and for the Flash film, and we heard they were doing something very similar to Grant Morrison on Superman, so it was MTV actually, got a hold of the new head of DC Entertainment, and she basically flat out said, like, at the moment there are no current plans for a Superman movie. So that's that on that, I guess. Although the one thing I keep in mind about that is, like, the fact that when they announced this, they said at the start of next year, like around, you know, January, February-ish, they're going to actually announce a full slate of projects. Presumably that will not include Jonah Hex and Losers, which come out next year, so we know about those. This will be or Lobo, which films next year. This will be other stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if Superman's listed on there. I mean, because, you know, they do have to get another one out. They have to get one in production in 2 years. That's a long ways to go, and, you know, I'm not really worried about it. They'll have to get I think we'll see Superman sooner rather than later. What do you guys think?
I really hope that they keep that title that they announced a couple of months ago, Superman Unleashed. I'm pretty fond of that title. I like it. Like that title.
That's the title that's the title of a sequel. And since they're not going to do a sequel to Bryan Singer's movie, man. Maybe that'll be the.
Why don't they call it the Superman? Just like how other sequels seem to, like, they reject numbers after a while. They call it the whatever.
They should call him anything. Yeah, you know what? You're right, Ed. They should call it the Superman with an exclamation point at the end of it, like The Informant. The Superman!
Yeah, therefore Superman's got that look on his face with the poster and...
Yeah, exactly.
Tell a lie, of course. What the hell am I talking about? He was called the Man of Steel, the Man of Tomorrow, which they've never used any
of
those.
That's about to say. Well, that was going to be the title to Bryan Singer's sequel, like Superman.
You kept calling it that.
Everyone kept calling it that. What the hell? I mean, it's not my fault. I was going off what everyone else said. That was another thing we heard a while back. Like, that's still going to be the title is Man of Steel for the reboot or re-whatever. I call it the Superman re-whatever because who the fuck knows what it's going to be at this point.
It's so re.
Yeah, it's...
There's a re involved.
It's so re. That's funny. We'll see what happens. I don't know.
Superman re-souped.
Re-souped.
Or something. Re-souped.
Superman kicks, or as Kevin Smith said, Superman kicks as much ass as humanly possible, we promise. Which, yeah. I don't know if that really means anything, because, I mean, like, they delivered a Hulk movie where he kicked a lot of ass and no one cared, so I don't know if that's going to...
You couldn't fit all that on the ticket, but I'd be fine. It would just say...
You know, if you can have a movie called Quantum of Solace and have it on your ticket, which, you know, if you remember on our old live show, I said, like, that would not be on my ticket, and it was. You know, my ticket would have said, like, Quas or James Bond. Instead, it said Quantum of Solace. So, you know, you could. You don't know that.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Don't hold me back, damn it.
Borat's the longest title in movie history. They could have a Superman title like that.
It is?
There was the longest title in movie. It was that Englishman who went up a hill and came up down a mountain.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That was it? See, yeah. I thought it was going to be the what was that MST3K episode? The mysterious strange creatures that stopped
living in something or other. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because they gave it a song, apparently, on MST3K, which I will not repeat right now.
Or
so anyway.
It could be that made-for-TV Holly Hunter movie, which I've seen, The Alleged Adventures of the... The Adventures of the Alleged Texas Cheerleader Murdering Mom. That's right, that's what it's called. It's a great movie, that.
Really?
You've seen it.
See, just going off that title, I thought of Serial Mom when you just, like, described that. I'm thinking of the John Waters 94 film with, who was in that flick? Somebody. Anyway.
Patty Hearst and Sam Waterston, I believe.
Oh, my God, Sam Waterston. And to think, I was just talking about Law & Order. What a shock. I guess he wasn't playing Jack McCoy in that. See, that's the problem. Like, some actors get caught in one role. It's like whenever Law & Order goes off the air, which will be in about 40 years from now, you know, Sam Waterston's gonna have to play another character when he's not doing those like insurance commercials and shit. But even when he's doing
Old Glory. Okay.
Yeah, but you know what? He's even playing Jack McCoy in those Old Glory commercials. Who are we kidding? He's basically, you know.
It's funny to see him young in the 1970s Great Gatsby, actually.
Yeah, and in the Killing Fields. It's Jack McCoy! You know, it's just so fucked up. I watched a Clint Eastwood movie last night, Pale Rider was on, and there was Michael Moriarty, and I was just like, Ben Stone! But then again, I knew Michael Moriarty before Law & Order. I knew him from the Larry Cohen movies. So that when I heard he was on Law & Order, I was like, does he play like a crazy person? And like, no, he's playing an ADA. Really? It's just so weird, you know. I don't know if you guys ever watched Larry Cohen stuff like It's Alive, Cue the Winged Serpent, The Stuff. Great, just...
Oh, I heard of The Stuff. No, the only time I think I've ever seen Michael Moriarty was in a very early... Because he's in one scene of The Last Detail. He plays, I think, some like hard-up Marine at the brig. And he's just there. And, you know, like I said, it's a very bit part. So it's like, oh, yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah, he is in it. He's listening to that movie. I haven't seen that. And I love me some Hal Ashby because... Being There is one of my favorite films of all time. So, and as you know, it's my avatar on Twitter is Chancey Gardner. So, but anyway, I gotta get that DVD because it has deleted scenes, and I really want to see. I think it's an alternate ending to Being There, which I gotta see. That I can just go on YouTube, be the one. Kind soul probably illegally put the ending on there. I can just not have to pay $20. This is my fight right now. But anyway, let's see, moving on.
It's nice when someone, you know, the Superman non-use, because it gives you an excuse to post that Japanese car commercial again.
It does give you that excuse, doesn't it? That's the closest thing we're going to get to it for now, actually. I'm glad you brought that up, since no one else seems to care. I'm
I
shocked,
like me too.
I really did, and we didn't rehearse this beforehand. Like, all right, this is when you say this. Okay, say it like this. Yeah, a couple of Japanese commercials for the Toyota Prius. We talked about it before. Using the Superman Returns suit, using kind of a new rift on the John Williams theme. It's slightly different. It's not the one John Ottman did for the Bryan Singer's movie. It's obviously not John Williams doing it. Someone else doing it. They're pretty decent, and for a year or two now, it'll be the closest we get to another movie, so you better enjoy those 2-3-minute commercials where he flies and looks at a Prius. I don't know. It's so good Superman wants to buy a Prius. So I'm waiting for them to do, like, Spider-Man commercials and shit, you know.
Do commercials. He did them for Hostess Fruit Pies.
He did?
Well, comics, anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I did one of those on, I think it was Dexter's Laboratory. They did a joke about that at one point, I think. I think it was Dexter's Laboratory. I don't remember. Fuck it.
And we got a whole Spider-Man TV show in Japan. So it's not like they should have Spider-Man.
Which I've seen that show. I caught the pilot. It wasn't even so much a pilot. It was just like the first episode.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a nice theme song.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say it's fucked up because that's just, you know, it's a different culture. There's a difference between just like...
He's got a car. Of course it's fucked up.
He had a car in the comics.
He did have a car in the comics. Yeah.
He did.
Dude,
wow.
There's... Yeah,
I know.
There
it
was
like a dune buggy.
Yeah, there was a point where like they did a Fantastic Four cartoon in the early 80s, and they didn't put the Human Torch on there for the sole purpose they thought kids would try to light themselves on fire.
Yes, I know, yes.
They put Herbie the Robot, and it's like, do you think kids are that stupid? Generally, yeah, I would say yes, they're stupid, but I don't think they're that dumb. I mean, kids nowadays would probably want to be like, I don't know, like fucking, what character would kids try to emulate nowadays? Jack Sparrow? I don't know. Hey, that's a segue.
The Joker.
That's a segue, Jack Sparrow. Oh, yeah, the Joker, too. So apparently this is something that kind of developed on Friday, or Saturday, actually. But apparently a gentleman by the name of Dick Cook, who's been a chairman over at Disney for about 4 years now, has been let go. Sort of up in the air about whether or not he was fired or he resigned on his own accord, what really happened. But the point of the story, though, why we're bringing it up, is the fact that there was an interview with the Los Angeles Times with Johnny Depp where he heard about this and basically said, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, like, I'm not really nuts about Pirates 4 anymore. Like, you know, the reason I signed up for Pirates to begin with was because I got along with Dick Cook really well. He's a really nice guy. The fact that he's not involved now, my enthusiasm for a Pirates 4 now is kind of hit the skids a little bit. And what's interesting is the fact that he brings up, or the article brings up, is the fact that, you know, there actually isn't a done deal in place, apparently, for Depp to return, and yet he's shown up at two different Disney events dressed up as Jack Sparrow, in character, talking about a fourth Pirates movie. So clearly he's a big team player and shit, and it's, I think it's interesting, like, 'cause we all assumed it was a done deal that he was coming back. So it sounds like he might try to get himself out of doing this movie. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go ahead and immediately say, like, oh, this means this, 'cause it could be just talk, as Phil said off air, like, well, you know, they'll give him a whole booty full of money and that'll change it. But he's got a ton of money to begin with. I don't think it's going to be 100% about the money with Johnny Depp at this point. I don't know what you guys feel about that one.
No, I would agree. I mean, he does have a ton of money, so it's not – I don't know. I mean, let's – I mean, but I'm sure movies have gone –
Look how much we care about Pirates 4.
That's true.
No, Johnny, don't. No, we need it.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's come on. Come on, Johnny. Don't do it. Just leave it alone. It's already – you know, it's run its course, man.
Let it go.
Yeah, it really did. You don't need the money. You own a fucking island. Like, come on, dude. Like, really. Brando owned an island. Look how big he got. Like, come on.
Are you talking in terms of celebrity or in terms of weight?
Both. Hopefully Johnny Depp won't get that big. That'd be
horrifying.
That would be funny.
That'd be disappointing, actually.
He got that fat. But, you know, when you get that you get that successful, at some point you just say, I don't give a fuck anymore. You know, apparently that's what happened with Brando, because that's why he started doing these terrible movies and stuff. You know, he was supposed to do Scary Movie 2 at one point, and they were going to pay him a ton of money, and, like, he, I don't know, whatever. Scary Movie 2, for God's sake. Marlon Brando showing up. Like, really? Has it gotten...
You know who showed up in Scary Movie 2? James Woods.
That's right. And we love ourselves some James Woods, particularly Phil, but we do. So do Ed and I, so we're not, you know...
And as I've said this in other chats, if they're going to get – we talked about what we think should happen with Pirates 4, but obviously, you know, I'll say it again, they're going to have Johnny and they can have Jeffrey Rush back. They need to get a really cool new villain, an evil, unredeemable shit, and James Woods should play him. You would watch James Woods
so James
as a
Woods
pirate
will play
overlord.
Basically the same guy he did in Hercules.
That would be awesome. Yep. Let him play the character from Hercules. Let him play the character from Hercules, just because apparently this movie is going to be the most far-out Pirates movie they've done so far. Why the hell not? What was his character's name in Pirates? I forget. I mean, in Hercules.
He was Hades.
He was Hades, that's right. He can just play Hades in that movie. Who fucking cares? Because apparently Disney's mentality is, as long as we got Johnny Depp, we're printing money. So it's just like, you know, let's see how far Johnny Depp can take this with a Pirates 4. Like, what if we did this? Are you coming back?
I don't think it's possible to make something more out there than Pirates 3. You can't beat the Crab Lady.
That's true, actually.
Oh, we love that bit.
I do love that bit. I do, actually. I can't help
but
it.
I think, look, here's one thing, no doubt in my mind. If they lose Johnny... and they're not confident enough to go ahead with a big screen one, they'll do a direct-to-DVD one. I'm sure they will. It'll turn into the American Pie series. They'll just bring out one a year.
So Eugene Levy will play Captain Jack's uncle.
Straight ahead, Mr. Gibbs.
We don't. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually in my video store the other day, and they actually had Gooby for sale.
Oh, dear God.
They did. Okay. I did not buy it, but if they had
good.
It, I would have.
You might as well light your money on fire if you're going to spend money on that DVD.
You're not the least.
I would say wipe yourself with it, but that money is filthy, so.
It's blood money.
I would love to know what, we haven't posted on this yet, I would love to know what people in the comment section think about this, about whether they should, obviously they shouldn't, if Johnny bows out, they shouldn't recast.
They would never recast.
No, they would never do that. That's suicide. No, but, I mean, should they go ahead with... If they can get Will Smith... If they can get... This is way out there. But if they can get Will Smith being Pirates 4, will they do it? Should they do it?
If you can get Will Smith for any movie, you will make it. Who are we kidding here? I mean, come on. He's the biggest movie star in the world.
Isn't he supposed to be doing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea for Disney?
No, that was McGee talking out of his ass for the, like, 100th time. McGee
was talking out of his ass? I'm sorry, I find that completely implausible.
I know,
dude. How dare
you?
I know, man. Can't make baseless accusations like that.
You learned something new today you didn't know before. Oh. It's like those old NBC bumpers, the more you know. You know, doon, 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 doon.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, No, that's G.I. Joe. Yeah, get it right, sir. No, although, you know, you mentioned that real quickly, it's funny because they had the D23 convention last week, which we talked about on last week's podcast. Not a word about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Captain Nemo. They talked about John Carter Mars, which ain't coming out for another 3 years. They talked about Pirates 4, obviously. The cheapest Muppet movie ever made, which I'm looking forward to personally.
That's a great title.
And no mention of 20,000 Leagues, so I think we can kind of safely assume that it ain't happening. Maybe that's just me, but... Zing.
We should just end the show now.
Are you gonna write for Leno with those zingers?
Oh, see, now who's the bitch?
What?
You're the one making bitchy comments now.
Oh, true. But I always am. I'm the bitchy one of this podcast, as we all know. See, two other topics offhand. Star Trek 2, they're not going to call it Star Trek 2. Actually, J.J. Abrams said what they'll do is they'll call it Star Trek, you know, colon something, something, something. Something, something, dark side. I don't know. That's
it's
pretty
a great
much...
title.
It is, actually.
Something, something.
Yeah, so...
have the balls to take a franchise movie and call it that. Just make fun of this whole subtitling shtick that we're stuck with these days. No one has the balls to number a sequel. They're always colon something something.
It depends on how far into the franchise it is. Like, you know, obviously you get to the 9th or 10th movie, you don't want to call it number 10. Like, you don't want to call Bond 23 Bond 23. Because as we all know, it's actually Bond 3. Let's be fair. We know it's the third one. I don't know why they keep this goddamn 23 bullshit. It's reboot. That means you're starting from over. I mean, I'm just saying. But anyway.
That's how I get it straight in my head. If I called it Bond 3 in my article, people would be confused. Some people would.
That's how you just a disclaimer, you know, as you know, just say like, you know, according to Jamie Williams, which means it's right. And then there you go. Then start your article or a little asterisk.
Well, you write one then. You write a counterpoint to my article and tell me how insane I am for even suggesting that Moneypenny should be in a Daniel Craig movie and it should be lighter. You do that. But
did I not back you up and say I'd be willing to see her show up in favor of Q showing up? Like
you said to me, which technically
happened. You know what? I just did then. So you know what? That just happened.
Damn it! All
exactly.
Right.
But anyway,
also to counterpoint another point, yeah. I should say that obviously Iron Man 2 is just called Iron Man 2. So I'm completely wrong. Sometimes they do number sequels. They should just call Star Trek. They should just call it, you know. They should call it Star Trek colon, who cares, you're going to see it.
That's true, actually. Like that. Now, you know what's going to be called? Star Trek printing money, because that's what sequel's going to do.
No. The reason they should call it is Star Trek 2, Trek Harder. thanks to Die Hard 2, you should just have a sequel where it's that one word from the original title, just say, put harder next to it.
So. See, I thought you were going to say so very tired, but after seeing the reboot, it's not really tired anymore.
The original cast would be very tired.
Yeah, they would be wheeled out, you know, and
yes,
some of them
literally wheeled out.
Yeah, from the morgue, some of them. Oh,
yeah.
You'd have to bring them out Scotty's ashes. So.
What? Oh, but anyway, so they. What? I'm just, you know, why are you hating on me, Phil? I mean, come on, man.
I'm with you. I think it's funny.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell. The signal was getting lost there. But anyway, for the Star Trek sequel, they interviewed with J.J. Abrams and Bob Orshi, and they basically said that the plan right now is they're thinking about going for a more, you know, to have, you know, contemporary issues in the sequel. You know,
whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever. Well, I mean,
well,
you know,
will the Federation get involved in credit default swaps? We'll find out.
Well, I think it's a good thing. Well, you know what? Let me rephrase that. I would be concerned that it would come off as too heavy-handed and preachy. But Abrams, in the same quote, Abrams said, but there is that balance. You don't want to be preachy. You know, you're still doing a adventure film, sci-fi action adventure film, and you have to deliver, you know, it's good guys and bad guys. So you still have to do that. And so we clearly know we're not getting away from that, but we'd like to put a message in here, you know, like the old Star Trek series from the 1960s had. I like that. So clearly, you know, I'm not as concerned. If Abrams is not involved as the director, then I'd be a little bit more concerned, but it sounds like he's going to come back to direct. So then I'd be like, okay, dude, you got my faith. Just, you know, you get the benefit of the doubt. If it was just Orchie and Kurtzman, though, I'd be worried as shit, because as we know, when they're not working with J.J. Abrams and Damon Lindelof to rewrite after them, they deliver some pretty fucking terrible movies for the most part. So that's where I would be worried. And I give K&O the credit in the world, because Star Trek, the reboot, was their story. It was their idea. So they do deserve credit for that. But still, I'm just saying.
They need motivating.
They need yeah. I mean, you get someone, you know, they work with Michael Bay, who's insane also, so he likes their insane ideas. I'm just saying, you know,
Here's an idea. If they want to deal with contemporary issues, here's one. I'll inspire them. I'll help them out. Here we go.
All right.
How about the Vulcans get a really great movie, but the Klingons have to wait a whole another 6 months before they can see it, and they start going ballistic, as they would, because they can't see the movie. And everyone else on Vulcan's talking about it in their podcasts, and the Klingons can't see it, and all hell breaks loose, and Starfleet's got to sort it out. There's an idea.
That maybe. Although I will say, I mean, everyone sees like the examples of like you know torture, you know, the issues of torturing during war, and use the Klingons as an example. Someone brought this up, I forget where, and it was an analogy that I actually thought of when I was watching the reboot this past summer, which was, you know, the Vulcans are essentially the Israelis, you know, fighting, you know, they need somewhere to their land to make their own. Yeah. And their fight over the land. I kind of thought about that, like, when I was watching Star Trek, when I was actually watching the film this summer. I was like, so Vulcans are Israelis? I guess? You know, I don't know if you guys read into that, but I kind of read into that kind of allegory when I was watching it.
I did, actually. But then again, you know, District 9, yeah. You know, you want to watch the comparisons there.
That's true. You know, we'll see what happens. I have, like I said, if Abrams is involved, I'm not really as concerned. But, we'll see how it goes. What do you think, Ed?
It goes back to what we were talking about with the modern day issue. I mean, we'll see. I hope they keep the optimism and, you know, and the funness of the movie. I don't know what else really to say about it until we get some better ideas.
And that's a good point, though.
You're following this issue far more than I am. But,
true.
I mean, ultimately, we don't know really what's going on with this movie until we get more information.
Well, it's a little bit. It's not non-news. I mean, that's why we covered it, because it wasn't just like them saying, "Yeah, we're writing it. That's it." Because if they had said that, which they've said so many.
No, I agree.
I would never have touched it. But you know, you bring up an excellent point. I thought about it. I don't know if I mentioned this in the article. Is the fact that, you know, Star Trek did so well because it was a plain and simple escapist popcorn film. Like, it was good guys and bad guys. People, everything's doing so bad right now with the economy, people want to get away from it. That's one of the reasons why people loved Star Trek, in my opinion. It was a very simple story, I think. And I don't know how things are going to be in 2 years when it comes out, which I think they will be better personally, but that could be just me. You know, people might not want...
It's ambitious. It's, I don't know, man.
Are you saying for a dark and gritty Star Trek? How would that work, anyway?
Let's make it like Dark Knight, like every retard.
Kirk is like sweating and, you know, swearing and drinking, and, you know, it's basically Star Trek by way of Mammoth.
Nice, a Mammoth Star Trek movie. I would watch that actually. That would be pretty.
Well, basically, no one would get to the point in Star Trek Mammoth. It would be like, I want you to shoot the photon torpedoes. The torpedoes? Yeah, the torpedoes. These torpedoes? Yes. Those torpedoes. You want me to fire the torpedoes? That's right. I want you to fire the torpedoes. Nothing would get done because no one can answer a direct question.
Oh, that's classic.
As long as Alec Baldwin gets to show up and give a speech, we're good. We'll be totally game for all that.
Well, Alec Baldwin would be Kirk in this.
Nice. I'm sold, man. I don't know who fucking cares who plays Spock. You got Alec Baldwin. You know what? Strike that. Do the 30 Rock thing. Have Alec Baldwin play both Kirk and Spock.
Exactly.
I'd watch that. You know.
There you go. There's another parody video waiting to happen.
It is waiting to happen, actually.
Keep working on that, Funny or Die.
Yeah. Okay, so last bit of news.
Just as a final thought on that, I hope, I'm worried because obviously this thing's going to be under lockdown. We're not going to know what the movie's about for the longest time, even once they start shooting.
Yeah, because
Abrams... And the problem with that is we're going to be hearing two fucking years worth of rumors about who's playing Khan, and I don't want to.
We don't.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah, we're not going to see Khan. If we do, then I officially lose faith in them. If we see Khan, I'm going to be like, okay, fuck you, because the whole point of this reboot was to sort of start everything anew, give it its balls back, and make it accessible to people. If you just throw Khan in there, my fucking God, I will just be, oh, Lazy.
You had to do it, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You had to do it.
Thank you. That's exactly my point. It's like you had to do it.
That they're not over there hard on for Star Trek 2.
I thought they got over their hard on for Star Trek 2. Didn't they already get over it? I mean, I've heard a number of comments saying...
I would think.
I've heard a number of comments saying, like, they basically already remade Khan because Nero was very Khan-like, and I would like to agree with that statement. I think that's very true, actually.
That's
surely...
kind of loose.
Oh,
well,
come
we'll
on.
We'll see. I mean, the plot is not going to be kept under lock and key like Avatar. It's clear we're going to get more information to come down.
It will be to a degree. Abrams, he's a big pickler for secrecy. I mean, he was on that with MI3. He was on that with Star Trek for a while. Obviously, I think with this one, though, Abrams might be a little bit more forthcoming with info than he was with the first film. But nonetheless, he is going to want to keep everything pretty tight. I mean, for a while, we didn't even know what the costumes and the whole movie was going to look like. And all of a sudden, we see the trailer, and it's like, holy shit, the Enterprise is an iPod store. You know, all those fucking retarded jokes and whatnot, which I just said one, so that makes me a retard by default, which you folks already knew. So anyway... Last bit of news items, and yes, it's a sequel, because that's all we talk about here. Not really, but, so...
Talk about Battleship, dammit!
Actually, you want to talk about Battleship? We'll talk about Battleship.
Let's, why don't we briefly touch on that?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about it. Fuck the
Peter
other
Peter Berg is getting another movie, so that's a good thing. I mean, he's
a
solid director.
He is a solid director, and he's doing the film version of Battleship, and it's coming out 4th of July weekend 2011, which is already going to be one crazy motherfucking stuffed summer. I'm intrigued by it because he gave a quote that was one of those, like, doesn't really tell you what the story is. Like, oh, it's a contemporary story of blah, 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 blah. But I'm game. You know why I'm game for this? Because it's not Hancock 2. I'm really glad he's, you know, I mean, apparently he's still doing that, but it's like, I'm glad they're actually, he's going to do something like this instead.
Well, I mean, the story could be anything because the Battleship in and of itself has no plot, so... Somehow they're going to work colored pegs in. I have no idea.
That and some douchebag saying you sunk my battleship at the end of the
movie. Yeah, someone's going to work that pretty sneaky, yeah. Sis, you know.
That was Connect 4.
Connect 4. Damn.
Unless they do the hybrid movie, you know, which I'm still looking forward to some of those movies. As we talked about, you know, Ridley Scott's Monopoly with Russell Crowe as Uncle Moneybags. I want to see that.
Yeah.
And Gore Verbinski's Clue. I mean, like, all these things, they write themselves. I mean, Guillermo del Toro's Candyland. The list goes on
and on. Alexander Payne's Life. I actually originally said Lars von Trier's Life, where there's actual fucking going on the wheel itself.
Which I would...
And then maybe someone is fucking a life tile. I'm not sure, though, so...
That's funny. And very true. But, so what do you think, Phil, about a Battleship movie?
I said let's talk about it as a joke. I just don't – I can't talk about it because I have absolutely no concept in my head about how this possibly could be or work as a movie. I just know I want the Monopoly movie more and the Paul Verhoeven's Buckaroo. I'd like to see that as well. Apart from that, I'll just wait and see. If it's good, I'll see it. Sure. And yeah, I'm like you. I don't want a Hancock 2. I will take drastic measures to prevent it, actually.
The other movie I forgot to add to our list was David Cronenberg's Operation. Forgot about that.
Oh, that too.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
I just randomly thought of that. I was saying, like, I gotta say something funny. So, anyway.
What's funny, damn it?
Yeah, I tried to. I mean, you know. But the other...
It's funny bone.
He's got water on the knee. Oh, my God.
With Viggo Mortensen, I guess, as the body, would he be the one?
No, he'd be the doctor.
He'd be the doctor. Who would be the body, though? Cause he, like, with the red
the body,
nose.
Body,
Jürgen Prochnow, however you say his name.
Jürgen Prochnow?
Thank you very much. Yeah, he'd be the body.
Nice. So you heard it here, folks. We've announced it, so that means it's going to happen. So Harrison Ford had an interview, I think, in France, of all places. I don't know what he was doing down there, whatever. Hey, man.
He's trying to find his wife and daughter. Wife and his family.
Where's my family? Yeah, that was one of the few actually very good Family Guy jokes in the last, you know, couple of years where it's like, hey, the Harrison Ford movie where he always looks for his family. That's true.
Well, that was already done. Someone did an internet video of that, and I'm sure because, like anything else, Family Guy just stole it, where it's the ultimate Harrison Ford movie where it goes, my wife, my daughter, my wife, my daughter.
Did that predate the Family Guy joke, though? That's the question.
I think it did.
Probably did.
I, I'm pretty sure it did, but
I you know, Phil's shocked about McGee talking on his ass. I'm shocked that you're employing Family Guy and Seth MacFarlane rips off other people. I will not have it on this podcast, you know. But anyway, Harrison Ford says that they've cracked a story for Indiana Jones 5, I guess.
God help us.
I know. That's so very tired. But yeah, so he says that Lucas...
What does that fucking word mean, cracked? It could mean anything. It could mean he thought of something while on the John and wrote it.
Maybe he was eating nuts at the time.
Or maybe he meant cracked as in the magazine. Like, it's going to be a parody of Indiana Jones for this one. Who knows?
It could mean anything.
Yeah, but he says they figured it out. They're going to make it. What I think is even more interesting is there's a video of like Karen Allen basically saying, like, yeah, I think we're going to – she clearly is out of the loop, I think. She was saying, like, oh, yeah, we're going to make another one in 2012. Like, she clearly – the video's on there. I think Slash Film found the video at the DragonCon convention, and she's basically said something to that degree, like, yeah, I have a friend in Hollywood. He told me that, like, we're going to start shooting in 2011. They've already officially announced it. I'm looking around like, did they officially announce Indiana Jones 5 and we didn't cover it? Because I'm pretty sure we would have covered it, you know.
It would be nice to see an indie movie in the 60s, set in the 60s, see what they do with that.
What's he going to do, though?
Yeah, I mean,
no,
what,
I know.
What else
despite
is he going
to... retired Nazis. Nazis on the run.
See, that's the one where he looks... God. That's the one where he looks for the Fountain of Youth, so you can, like, find your outing. You know, you don't have to cover that anymore. You know, get a younger actor, replace him at the end. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
It'll be Harrison Ford's son. There you go.
There you go. You mean Shia LaBeouf? You know.
No. I know. Movie. I meant his son of life, but.
Yeah, maybe. I just, you know.
Maybe they could combine with Matt.
You like the movie, James.
Which one?
Even you don't want, surely.
What's that?
The fourth one.
Oh, I liked it, sure. But yeah, I think that ending was kind of... I was under the assumption that ending was kind of purposely saying, like, okay, we're done for real this time. Because, like, you know, you saw the end of Last Crusade, and Spielberg said that shot was framed specifically to say, we're done. This is it. Goodbye.
As far as I'm concerned, that still is the end. I don't even...
And for a lot of other people. Although, yeah. I will say, to be honest, when I wrote the article about this, I said it disappointed most people. That's not really true. A lot of people liked Indiana Jones 5. You just heard of from us nerds who didn't like it. But that movie made a lot of money, and actually it held on pretty decently in the second weekend. I mean, it only dropped like 54% the second weekend. I mean, so people enjoyed the movie. So,
do you know what I think it was? I think the people who saw it the first weekend went home to talk to the people who didn't see it the first weekend, and they said so, and they just said aliens, and they went, oh, fuck, I'm seeing this. I don't care if it's
that would be known as the Spider-Man 3 effect. Because you would be talking about how bad Spider-Man 3 was. So I'm like, okay, I got to see this to find out.
That's true, actually, because you cannot, like, describe Spider-Man 3 to people, like, yeah, and, like, the butler explains the plot in the third act. It's like, I gotta watch this.
Bill Paxton's dad explains the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, my God. I remember even seeing that in the midnight screening going, really, Sam Raimi? Really? We're going that far? Like, I realize you want to put your children in the movie because they're young and you want to have, like, a time capsule of how little they were. I get that, man. That's cool. But the butler? Come on. I know it's not 2007 anymore. We shouldn't be talking about that. But I'm sorry. You know, it's just like...
The bit that made me stare in disbelief was when they actually find a way to save Venom for future movies by pulling Eddie Brock out of the symbiote. And then 5 seconds later, they just say, ah, oh, never.
Yeah, fuck it. Well, I you could have theoretically, you know, saved Topher Grace to play Spider-Man in another movie, since he's very much, I mean, like, he could have pulled off the wit that, you know, Spider-Man had. I could have seen him as Webhead. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, no, I think he auditioned for it at one time.
Did not know that. That's interesting.
It wouldn't surprise me. And then there was the whole thing of, like, at the time, you know, between Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2, there were serious considerations of having Jake Gyllenhaal do it because McGuire had wrecked his back, but his girlfriend at the time was a major Sony executive. I remember it was a huge story at the time. It was a
There's a lot of conflicting info. They said, like, he did have the back problems. That was true because he shot Spider-Man, and then he shot Seabiscuit, and then he had to go immediately on Spider-Man 2, and those films involved a lot of, you know, wiring work that would have just killed his back, that had killed his back. But the other story was that he wanted too much money for Spider-Man 2, and they were willing to cut him loose. That was the other version of the story I heard. So I don't know what happened. Yeah, so I don't know where the truth lies. It's probably somewhere in between. Like, yeah, he did have back
Of
problems, and
course.
yeah, there was money problems, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, it's not a problem anymore since they're paying him a, you know, an arm and a leg for Spider-Man 4. Shooting next year. Eh, whatever. But
Right.
anyway,
But
so
you know,
that's...
regarding Indy 5, do you know what? The
Yes.
problem I have with it, the problem I it's just that I hear the same every time I read an Indy 5 story, and God knows why I am reading Indy 5 stories. I really don't know. I can't explain or excuse my actions, but I am reading these stories. But every time I hear the same sentence repeated, we're gonna make sure that all three of us are on board, meaning Harrison, Lucas,
And
and
Spielberg.
Spielberg. In which case, fuck it. You spent 19 years finding something you could agree on last time, and what did we get? I'm done. Done.
Well, the other thing about that, though, and you're not wrong, but it's the fact that I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it almost felt like Spielberg made the fourth one just kind of just to get it out of him. Like, okay, fine, let's.
Obligation.
Oh,
He said he
fine,
wants to
let's
make it.
just make it. Whatever. But the other one thing I thought about, and I didn't mention the article, but as I recall, there's a deal in play when they signed the deal for Raiders. The agreement with Paramount was that they would distribute and bankroll Raiders and three sequels. This was a, you know, well, guess what? That contract's up now. So theoretically, for all we know, Indy 5, if it happens, could be made by, I don't know, the Mouse, since DreamWorks now is a part of Disney, and Lucasfilm can co-produce it with them. I wouldn't be surprised. And also,
Wow.
there's been a lot of talk about, hey, look, you know, Spielberg's trying to find a lot of commercial properties for his new investors. Well, what would be a huge commercial property for your new investors? Indiana Jones 5. Just saying.
Indiana Jones 5 and the X-Men. I mean, come on, if it's gonna the Ugh. mouse is gonna do it, which Marvel superhero should they team him
That
up
would be
with? Let's just
Fox,
go
since
for two.
Fox owns those characters. It'd probably be
Oh,
Indiana Jones and the Hulk. I could see that, actually. No, I couldn't, actually. But still.
no,
Anyway.
you
So
can't.
that's the wrap-up for news this week. So, our final little part of the podcast, the new feature, not really new anymore, since it's our third go-around. It's called Moan About a Movie. We discuss another film that's not in theaters right now, from the past. It doesn't matter how far back from the past, frankly. It's my turn this week, so I will do the intro. It's a little movie called Closer that came out at the end of 2004, directed by the great Mike Nichols. You've seen plenty of his stuff. Written by Patrick Marlborough, adapted from his play, which I think was from the, I want to say the mid-90s, but I could be, it was the 90s. I don't know if it was the middle or end of that
According
decade.
to Wikipedia, the play, I believe, came out in 97, if I'm looking at this right. Yeah, it was the 1997 play of the same name.
That
Thank
makes
you.
sense.
That's
You don't know about Patrick Marber's comedy career, do you, in this country?
I don't, which is so funny to hear that. I mean, there's certainly some wit to this movie, but let me go ahead and get the description. So basically, it's a. I read some ads, and they called it an adult love story. It's like, well, there's love involved in the movie, so I kind of right? Actually, not really. It's basically about four people and how love can make you very fucked up. Love can make you know, love the world. And like when you're in love, like you are walking on air, man. You're in such a great mood. When you're at the end of a relationship and so-and-so's left you for whatever reason, your heart's broken, you want to basically fuck the world over. And that's what Closer is about, in my opinion. So you basically have four characters, and only four characters in this movie. Since it's based on a play, it feels very much like a play. You've got Dan, who's a obituary writer slash novel, failed novelist, played by Jude Law. You've got his girlfriend.
Boo.
Get to that in a second. His girlfriend Alice, played by who's a waitress, and we find out later a stripper, played by Natalie Portman.
There.
Anna, a photographer, played by Julia Roberts, who takes Jude Law's picture in the first act of the movie for his novel, for said novel. And you've got Larry, a dermatologist, who is Anna's husband. Eventually in the movie, played by Clive Owen. And going into details about how they met and how they intertwine, it would come off as way soap opera-y for me to really do it justice. So really, we're just going to talk about the movie right now. That's really all you need to know, those four characters and the fact that their love lives intertwine and makes them very fucked up. That's all you really need to know, in my opinion, in terms of
Well, I'd
plot.
like to add one thing to your description of it, because you
Yes.
kept using the word love.
Yes.
In my opinion, this is a story about four characters who are in love, but wouldn't know what love actually is if they
tripped over it. That's what this is. It's a movie about people who are in love but don't actually know what the fuck love is. So
that's a very
that.
Good, good analysis right there, because you have the feeling that, and once again, if you see this movie or if you're familiar with it, do not look it under the idea that this is not, that real people wouldn't act like this. This movie is not real. Well, obviously a movie is never real, but I'm saying it's not meant to be about real people.
No.
And what works so well about this movie is, one thing, the writing and the actors. You could believe that these people would, you know, are believable, and that they're, you know, not that, and they're interesting is the other issue. Because when you commonly deal with a movie about dealing with people and their love issues, it can be very easy to be turned off by, because one, you don't care about the people. Two, the writing sucks. Three, you wouldn't believe that these people would ever be in love. And then mainly when I go back to said earlier, that you just don't care. And it's very difficult, at least for me, to see a movie about the, because I'm not a rom-com person, to watch a movie about relationships and basically how people are screwing each other out of them. So it's, you know, it can be difficult to find, you know, just to sit through it or just to find something good.
Well, what I think the other thing about this movie that troubled people was about, you mentioned rom-com, some of the people in this cast, i.e. Julia Roberts, were, you know, their career, their bread and butter for years was rom-coms. And here they are doing something that is absolutely not that whatsoever. But I think what is real about the movie is the feelings. I mean, like, you know, yeah, people, you know, people might not say that kind of stuff at times. They might not do that kind of stuff. But the emotions are there. Like, those are real emotions that people – that's the honesty of the movie. I've heard people people wouldn't do that. That's not true. It's like, well, you know, if you've never felt that way in a relationship, then you've never been in a relationship than a real one. You've never been in one. I felt that way. And Phil and I were discussing off air, as was Ed. We felt that way in relationships before. You know, I challenge anyone. I mean, yeah, did I get in front of my ex-girlfriend and say, you know, how was his cock? Was he better fucked than me? No, I didn't say that kind of stuff.
Right.
But you get angry enough, you think that in your head.
Oh, no, I would argue that the best scenes were obviously of Clive Owen's scenes, especially his interrogation of Julia Roberts in the loft, and then his following the next scene where he's at the strip joint with Natalie Portman. And what really makes this movie interesting is the way how it jumps time. We know less than the characters do. Time is only mentioned very casually. It's not displayed, you know, at the bottom of the screen where we are, you know, what year is it, what day is it. When I first started watching this movie, and we went from the scene of which Jude Law sees Natalie Portman down the street, and then they're suddenly together.
Right.
After he mentions how he had a girlfriend, I'm like, well, what the heck, did we just jump time? And then clearly, it's clearly that we did. But it's not so. It's just not obvious because these people aren't aging. That, you know, they're not aging. So it's just it goes over the period of 4 years.
Yeah, that's right. They mention.
It's very, very subtle how it's, you know, mentioned about, you know, that time passing.
And that's a real credit to the directing and writing, in my opinion, as well as the delivery. Because I mean, you know, any actor can deliver a line like, you know, it's been 4 years, but you know, it's just so matter. The whole movie is so matter of factly with time. That's what I really liked about it. One of many things I liked about it. You mentioned performances. This was Clive Owen's movie. I remember that was the summer he was headlining the King Arthur movie, which I liked, but, you know, clearly a lot of people didn't. I was entertained by it. I thought he was awesome in that movie, even if you didn't like the film. I thought, like, God damn, this guy's got star potential. This guy is a commanding presence. And then I see Closer, and I thought of any performance of that year, 2004, I thought Clive Owen gave the best performance of any actor that year, lead, supporting, whatever. And he was rightfully nominated for the Oscar, although for some reason, retarded reason, he was put in supporting, even though he wasn't supporting. He lost to Morgan Freeman for the, you know, honorary Lifetime Achievement Oscar, essentially. I'm not knocking Morgan Freeman because, hey, I'm a huge fan, love the guy. He's done a lot of great movies, and it was a good performance in Million Dollar Baby. But I just, you know, come on, man. Clive Owen was this movie. You walk out of that movie going, you know, whether or not you liked it or didn't like it, but you go, that guy, that Clive Owen guy, was awesome.
Tell you how I walked out of it.
Okay.
I walked out of it. Well, obviously, I didn't see this movie until
I saw it in the theaters,
I watched this movie yesterday, and I said, man, I owe Clive Owen an apology, because I reviewed The International a couple of months ago, which is a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie, and I didn't think he wasn't bad in it, it's just that he wasn't doing anything. He was playing Clive Owen, and I'd seen a lot of movies where Clive Owen was playing what really just felt like Clive Owen,
right.
His Clive Owen persona. It's it's like going back to that thing we're talking about, these actors who can't really do other accents. They can't really play other kind of characters, so they just play the same thing. And I owe Clive Owen an apology, because Clive Owen can clearly play other people.
Well,
this character in Closer is completely different.
That's,
than anything
that's that and Julia Roberts. And Julia Roberts, too. I mean, I'm not the big... I think she's been good in a couple of movies, but I'm not a big fan of her, in, per se, but I think that was her absolute best performance. She's not playing Julia Roberts. I mean, she gives the smile, which I guess is like a contractual obligation. Julia Roberts must give the big smile in one movie, in every movie of hers. She gives it, and you don't really think about it. It's just, you know, she was clearly not playing the sweetheart character. I mean, you know, obviously in terms of who everyone says, well, all the characters are despicable. True, but if any character you walk away feeling bad for the most, or you at least empathize with, you go, well, you know what, this person, their actions were justified. It's Clive Owen. It's Larry.
Owen is the most common, relatable person. He's the common man.
He's the common man. Well, in this movie, or you mean just in general?
Well, in the movie, okay. The way he is.
Yeah, but he's the one
who gets... in the strip joint was unbelievable.
He's a great model. He's dragged into this movie. He's dragged into the story where every other character kind of gets involved by choice. He's dragged into it. He's fine living the kind of life he is right now. I don't know if he's fine with it, but he's clearly living his own existence without these three other people. He gets dragged into it. He gets fucked over by all this, and he basically says, you fucked me, I'm going to fuck you 10 times over, and you'll regret ever getting involved, messing with me. And he goes about doing just that to the other three, well, not the other three characters. He doesn't really mess with Natalie Portman, and he does kind of fuck with his wife, but he mostly goes after Jude Law's character. He makes no qualms with the fact that I fucking hate you and I will bring you down if I can. And he basically does.
Which is not hard. He's such a pathetic wretch.
Well, he is a – yeah, he is kind of – yeah, that's true, actually. The worst character in the movie is Jude Law. That was the Dan character. You go from liking the guy at the beginning because he seems – I mean, like, you know, Natalie Portman's character, Alice, gets run over by a fucking car. What's he do? He runs over to rescue her. The cab driver doesn't want to deal with him. He's like, yeah, yeah, I know I hit her, but whatever. He says in the hospital with her, he makes sure she's okay. He seems like a really likable, genuine guy, and then we realize he's a slimy bastard. You know, because as you mentioned earlier, Ed, he mentions he has a girlfriend, and it's pretty much implied that he, you know, started seeing Natalie Portman while he was presumably still with his other girlfriend, who's never seen in the film, but mentioned once. It's implied. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel any sympathy for him by the end of the movie. He's the character who's basically screwed over the most. He's the one who is essentially the loser at the end of the film. I didn't feel any sympathy for him. I was like, you know what, dude, you deserved it. You played with matches. You got burned. You know.
Absolutely.
Let's hear it.
Right.
Well,
it's kind of hard to. Obviously, we're talking. It's a different. It's not like the King of Kong. This I haven't seen it 20 times. I've only seen it once.
Wow.
I'm trying to get my thoughts together. I know, but it's like it's weird how I never saw this movie before because I'm such a fan of Patrick Marber's work from television. You probably. I don't know how much of his work you're familiar with. How much of it has come over to the States? Not much, I imagine. He was basically. He was one of the co-writers first on a satirical news show called The Day to Day, which was a send-up of British television news in the mid-90s. It came out in 94. It is one of the best television shows England has ever made, not just comedy shows. It is six. They only made 6 episodes, and it's 6 episodes of absolute genius. And he's in it as well. He's a comedic actor, so he's in these things as well. And he was also in the first... I'm sure you're familiar with Alan Partridge.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, Stephen Coogan's breakout comedy character. Yeah, he was the co-writer on the show that introduced Alan Partridge, a send-up of talk shows at the time. So this was where he comes from, and I'm a huge fan of all that work that he's done. So, yeah, to find out that he's actually a playwright and now a successful screenwriter.
And doing something like this, of all things. Because, I mean, there's a little bit of – I mean, everyone – again, you read the reviews, or at least I did when it came out, and it said, like, you know, it's a very witty movie, Closer. And I'm like, well, you know, I think the closest thing that comes to wit is the infamous, you know, porno chat room sequence, which is very – if you have a morbid sense of humor like I do, I found it very funny. But the audience was with didn't seem to enjoy it, you know.
No, Clive Owen's got some zingers. I mean, he's – obviously, every time he's adding, you know, one of those words at the end of his sentences – to dig into Jude Law.
Yeah.
I mean, it's meant to be funny, you know.
It's meant to be
what
funny.
What did he say?
He's got a lot of... Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah. Is London that stark, though?
It's, so, I mean, it's...
Is London really that stark? That's the other thing I walked up and was like, damn, London is just like, you know, it's not really
it's
like...
Not. It's just great cinematography.
Okay.
You can visit. You won't be depressed.
I won't want to...
So wait, Central London is not a theme park then? Well, how about
no,
that?
No, it's not. If it's a theme park, it's always being built.
Go ahead. Yeah.
That's my problem with London. It's never finished. They're always building it.
One of these
but
days.
Anyway, that's not nothing to do with the film.
No, but it's you know what it's the fifth character in the movie. I mean, if we're gonna really be fair, it really is. So what were you gonna say something, Ed? Go ahead.
I was just gonna also say the direction. I mean, Mike Nichols, obviously a very famous director both of plays and film. The direction was great. I mean, it was very matter of fact because you know it's based. The movie's based on a play, and it was kind of shot like one, too. There's no real trick photography, and everything is kind of wide shots and things like that. It was good, solid directing, also. I think, though, were not for these actors. If you had a different set of actors, you may not have believed what was going on.
Yeah, and of course, originally the Anna part was to be played by Cate Blanchett, who at the time, right before they started filming, she was pregnant with her second child. I think she's got three kids now. I think she had one right before Indy 4 came out. I don't remember. But so
she would have been good, though. I would have.
She would have been very good, actually. But it's
she's done movies like this, though. It's not as fresh as seeing Julia do it.
True, but that yeah, exactly. We got Julia Roberts, and in terms of the character performance, I thought that was an upgrade. And that's not a slight against Cate Blanchett because hey, if you're gonna ask me to pick between either, you know, Blanchett or Roberts, you know who I'm gonna pick, Cate Blanchett. But I like the fact that, you know, you've got the two American actresses and the two, you know, London British actors. Little bit of a difference there. I mean, you know,
yeah,
Natalie it didn't make Natalie Portman, it would have made Natalie Portman feel like the tacked on American character when you could have cast a British you could have cast a British actress as Alice. I mean,
you said Keira Knightley, this conversation's over, so
no, actually, I wasn't thinking of Keira Knightley. Cause you know why? Because the movie was a modern story. Oh,
there you go.
That's a bad.
I will say also about this movie, there, especially right in the beginning, you feel the. And I made a note of this. Actually, I was taking notes. I actually wrote down there was the unrelenting sexual tension going on, especially in the beginning, where Jude Law and Natalie Portman meet on the street, and you can just feel that going on. I mean, that's amazing acting work right there.
There is genuine chemistry between all four of the leads, which I think in sexual chemistry in terms of, but just like Jude Law and Clive Owen, they're bouncing off one another in the same way that Owen and Portman were bouncing off one another. Robertson Owen. This was, you had to find four actors who were perfect for these characters, and it's so weird to imagine that the original play, the Dan part, was played by Clive Owen. And it's so weird to think that, because it's like, dude, you were born to play Larry. I mean, ironically, interestingly enough, I looked this up, the role of Larry on stage was originally played by Phil and I's favorite, Sirian Hines. And it's like, boy, that would have been an interesting performance. Like, to have seen that in 97, obviously Phil and I would have been kids, but go back in time and see it as in our current age, it would have been like, boy, man, that would
have... Yeah, that would have been interesting, because the only thing I know of Clive Owen from like about 97 or around that time was his work in Croupier.
Which I have. That's a great movie, actually. I really
and,
dig
I don't. I that would have been strange.
Yeah, he was too young.
The way he looks and the way he's built, you know. You know.
Yeah. Larry is clearly...
Julian Hines has a scary face. I can't imagine Julia Roberts fucking that.
I was about to say...
Natalie Portman, that's frightening, actually.
It would have been a very different movie. It would have been Chris, Chris Matthews or Chris Hansen would have been alerted from Dateline NBC. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, Larry is supposed to be the oldest character. Like, you know, presumably the Dan and Alice... I mean, the Dan and Anna characters are probably in their mid-30s. Presumably, you know, obviously Alice is in her early to mid-20s, and then probably very early 20s, actually. She looks like she could be practically a teenager. And then you've got Larry, who's probably 40. So
he's
got to
be in his early 40s, at least.
Early 40s, and he's the one who's been through – clearly he's been through this situation similar. He's had the most kind of heartbreak and bad relationships. So, I don't know. It just comes from a place where he's been here before. He doesn't want to go through this again. Maybe that's the other reason why I empathize with that character so much. Then again, that was I was going through a horrible breakup myself, and I was still licking the wounds of it. So maybe that's why I identify with the Larry character so much. I don't know. It's all about
time. Well, who would identify with the Dan character, really? You know, that unless you're that sleaze.
Unless you're a bastard, you know, it's like, wow.
It kind of reminds me of some, like, SNL skit. I don't know if that actually happened, where Jude Law is, like, the headmaster at a school for cads. So unless you want to be a cad, I guess.
And I guess the other character who's the second most relatable, to a degree, sympathetic, is obviously the Alice character, played by Natalie Portman. I thought she was quite stupendous. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know how you guys feel about this. Do you think she's still under the shadow of these goddamn Star Wars movies, or do you think she's gotten out of it?
Nah. I don't think she's had that, you know. I don't think anyone thought that. But,
I'm just wondering, because it's like...
I do think, though, she seems to be, to me, she's one of those actresses who's stuck in a particular age, and she's never looked a day older since. She does not look like a woman to me.
She's
still
pushing
looks
30
like a...
now.
Yeah, she's
yeah
a,
I know.
Yeah.
Weird.
But you know what it, you know what it could be for her? It could be she'd fall more into the problem of the magical pixie girl, because she did of what she did in Garden State.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. And, oh, man.
Same year. Same year, actually. That's a very interesting point.
Well, Garden State was 05.
No, Garden State
was 04.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't want to get started on that movie. I don't.
But she looked like, to me, she looked like a little innocent pixie girl in V for Vendetta, which was 2 years later. She was she's still this tiny, innocent little thing.
Yeah, she's a small woman.
Particularly, I think when Phil says that, you're obviously thinking of the scene where she seduces the... she dresses up in age play, and she dresses up as a child. Like, you know, I'm sure certain people in that audience were, you know, a little weirded out by that shot. You know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Yeah. And Phil was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Ed too, apparently.
No, wait a minute.
It's okay, man. No one knows where you live. It's okay.
Well, friends,
they're tracing this call right now.
But
I think it's very interesting. I mean, we're talking about the casting.
Yes.
Usually this really shouldn't count for shit, but in the case of this movie, it is extremely important that the people who are cast are not just good-looking people, they're fabulous-looking people, because that's what the movie's about. It's about you being in a relationship. To me, the image that stays with me is, you know, it's these people. They're holding hands with their couple, they're in a relationship, and all they can do is fucking look in the crowd and find the next best thing, find the next woman, the next man, the person who's better looking than the person who I'm with. That's what I find. And so you find, look, women find Clive Owen extremely sexy. And I'm sure women find Jude Law very sexy. And there isn't a single man who has seen, you tell me if I'm wrong, who has seen a Julia Roberts movie who has not once crossed their mind, just at least once, she's a damn fine woman. She is a damn fine woman.
But then she nailed Lyle Lovett, so, you know, what can you do there?
That kind of, that's a good point, actually. And Kiefer Sutherland and Jason Patrick. And, no, the list goes on.
But she's still more tolerable than Gwyneth Paltrow.
So. Oh, my God. Yes. I think we can all agree upon that one. You know, and Phil's got – it's bad. Phil's got to put up with her. You know, I mean, Ed and I can joke. Phil's got to put up with her all the time. I'm sure he sees her on the streets all the time. He's like, oh, God, not her again.
Hey, look, we trade anyone for Madonna, please.
That's true, actually.
Not on your life, pal.
That's actually – I'm going to have to give that one to Phil. Phil,
I got to admit, I know this has nothing to do with Closer, but the Simpsons might have been slipping by the point they did the London episode, but that's a damn good joke at the end when they're trading Madonna to get it back in.
That was probably the only one good joke in that episode, sir.
That episode, yeah.
That was true. About that and seeing Joe Millionaire playing, I think he's playing a Hamlet, I believe it was. That's
maybe.
Two jokes. And
Tony
decent.
Blair with a jetpack.
It was decent. A little forced, I thought, but that's the point where Simpsons is just like, we're wacky. It's like, no, you're witty. You're not wacky.
Now, that
witty.
Whole thing was surrounded in controversy in this country because he recorded that dialogue right while the Iraq War was going on. So, like, okay, hold this conference, guys. I've got to go record some lines for the Simpsons. Three lines or not, it got him in some hot shit. But anyway, that's not.
It's not the big a deal. I mean, your leader.
It was in this country.
I know, but it's
there was one other joke I actually kind of liked when they showed the montage of the British tabloids. So I imagine you must have gotten a good laugh out of that, Phil.
I forget that joke.
I did.
It was just like they after you know Homer had rammed the. The royal carriage, and I forgot what it was like. I think one of them was a page 3 joke, and the other one, see, because it was all the British tabloids. I just don't remember what was on the papers.
They all look alike to me.
I'll watch the show again.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Got it saved. Anyway, back to Closer. So is there anything?
I just want to say thank you, Jamie, because otherwise I probably never would have seen it.
See, I'm really pleased that neither one of you said like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" when I picked that movie, because I mean, there's
some
people
that would have been interesting too. That's gonna happen one week, you know.
That is true, actually. But we've been a pretty good batting average so far. So yeah,
you
stay
tuned.
I suggested it as an idea.
But see, it's not on DVD. That's the problem.
Exactly. So. That's the problem. And as I've said before, there's not a mom-and-pop video store around here anymore. That's the sort of sad state the way we are right now. But they're gone, you know, with tons of old videos and shit you could find. Anything. I could have found these movies that we talked about off-air that we're going to discuss in the coming weeks. Can't find them, you know?
Because they were never put on DVD, so.
Most of them were. That's right. So, if I pick something obscure like The Vindicator, which I didn't pick that one, folks. I'm joking. I didn't really pick that one. But, you know, like you wouldn't find it anywhere. Of course, you're probably wondering, what the fuck is The Vindicator? Don't worry about it.
Is it a Charles Bronson flick?
No.
It sounds like that kind of thing.
That's interesting, but no, not at all, actually. Charles Bronson. No, not at all. So.
Who does?
hey, Bailey, you're not in Branson, Missouri. You're in Bronson, Missouri. You know. That was probably. I don't know how that sounded. I don't know how that sounded. That probably was horrible.
It's okay.
It's not Hank Azaria. All
right.
Fair enough. But anyway,
this was a great pick, and at least I was able to, get it under the gun and be able to finish the movie. So.
That was a great pick. I think so. I'm biased when I say that.
It was fantastic, and nice change up on top of that. So.
Thank you. So next week, yeah, you should actually see it totally. Mm-hmm. So I guess next week's our pal Lou, our fourth wheel, our fourth banana, if you will. Lou will hopefully be joining us, and he's got a film. We won't say what it is right now. We'll check it out. So I guess that's it. So hopefully more news will hit. We can talk about because, as you know, we didn't have that many news items, but we still were able to drag this past an hour because that's what we do. We'll ramble on. So anyway. Folks, thank you for joining us for this edition of Movie Moment at ThinkBeforeIThink.com. We do it because we love it. We appreciate when you leave comments. And hey, as Phil said last week, and I'll repeat it, if you've got ideas for movie titles for us to watch, man, throw it out to us. Send us an email or see in the comment section. We'll consider it. We won't just blow you off. Unless it's something, as we've said before, like watch The Dark Knight. Nah, we don't want to. Nah,
right.
No thanks.
I was the one who said this last week. It was like, It's not no bad movies, just because there are so many other people that people do this, and it's just like, let's actually try something that's a bit more unique, and that's also, and more importantly, that's easily accessible.
Yeah, I mean I could have easily said to Phil and Ed, let's watch I Spit on Your Grave, and we could have spent the whole time just like, you know, showering ourselves.
That was easily accessible.
I'm sorry? You think so?
I said the irony is that he's easily accessible.
Not
what,
surprising.
That film? Oh, my God. Yeah.
This country, anyway. I see it in bargain bins all the time.
Oh, my God.
I know.
With that cover? With, like, oh, my God. That's
hey,
funny.
Don't judge our country. We're going to save your ass in World War III, as you said before.
Hey, that's true, actually. So, anyway, guys, thanks for listening to us. We'll see you guys next week at the movies. You have a good one, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.